Welcome back to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. I'm joined by Trish Steed. Trish, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today, Steve?
I am well. Thank you very much. It is a busy day here at H3HR. It is a busy day. Now we're going to leave that in. I said we'll edit out the bad parts. That was funny. I couldn't say it's busy, but fun. Really excited. This is a
busy huge, here at your company.
We've got a great show today. I'm super excited for the show. We're going to be talking about vulnerability and trust. I mean, we're doing a lot of sharing on the show lately, Trish.
There's been a lot of sharing. And you know what? I think the response to that sharing has been really, really positive, right? People relate to that when you're sort of sharing yourself and your vulnerabilities. So I think that this is the perfect time to have someone come on and talk about that. And just as kind of background for anyone, we will have this in the show notes, but this all came about because our guest was on the Today Show. I was watching the Today Show, just kind of minding my own business. And the next thing I know, I'm hearing all about, you know, the workplace and building trust and in your organization and in your leaders and in your employees and how vulnerability plays into that. And so I was really wanting us to do this show, and I'm thrilled that we are going to do it today here with our guest.
I am as well. Let's welcome her to the show. Our guest today is Pat Waters. She is the Chief People Officer at UKG. In her role, Pat's day-to-day responsibilities are driven by her deep commitment to the entire employee experience. Pat oversees the critical HR functions that bring this experience to life. That includes talent acquisition, development, comp and ben, employee listening, people analytics, employee communications, HR tech, and much, much more. Her personal mission is to ensure that new crewers around the world are better people for having worked at UKG. That's pretty awesome. Pat, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me today.
It's our pleasure. So yeah, congrats on the Today Show. And Trish, you said you were watching the Today Show, minding your own business. What else would you be doing? Minding other people's business while you're on the Today Show in the morning?
You know, it's one of those things. I'm not a big TV watcher, like a news watcher either. So I don't even know why it was on in that moment. I was having a cup of coffee. Maybe I actually was taking a break. But I wasn't really like hardcore paying attention to what was on the show. And so all of a sudden I thought, wait a minute, I know who that is. And of course, you know, it perked up because I was telling Pat kind of pre-show, we've not met in person, but I've been at events where she's been speaking and have always been just really impressed with what she had to say. So I think that in combination of, you know, all of a sudden she's on my television and talking about things that I find quite interesting, I was all ears, captive audience for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So Pat, welcome. And maybe we'll start with that. It's a long journey, which led you to the Today Show, certainly talking about vulnerability, but maybe we'll start with that. Why that topic? Like, you know, of all things, because we could be talking about shortage of talent and remote work and hybrid working. And there's a million big work. AI, of course, is a huge issue in the workplace right now. But that issue on a national stage was important to you, obviously. I'd love to learn more about that.
I think it's important to everybody, and that's why it probably resonated and why they wanted to discuss it. Because if you think about all the things that are going on in the world, there's no pattern recognition. I know the last 4 years for me, there wasn't a template. I'm not a chief medical officer. I'm not a guru on the macro social challenges that are happening. I'm a student along with everyone else, being perfectly imperfect about it. But you got to be vulnerable enough to say, I don't know. Let me find out. I care. Let me touch the elephant with you. Let me figure out what's going on so I have the right perspective and then go through the path together. So I think vulnerability is the secret sauce to a healthier living.
Pat, I'm glad that you said that. And I made note of the being perfectly imperfect. You know, I grew up my first real solid 10 years in my career at a professional services firm at one of the big four. And I think that when you're young and junior in your career, you look up to the leaders and you put them on like almost a pedestal, right? Like they're just untouchable. So it's actually really refreshing for me to hear you as a chief people officer saying, we're not perfect. Do you feel like I joined the workforce back in the late 90s. Do you feel like as leaders, have we gotten better at that, at showing we are imperfect? Or do you think that a lot of us as leaders are still out there just kind of trying to pretend like we've got it all under control.
Gosh, I hope there's more vulnerability and honest conversations about imperfection going on today than there were, because we were all, regardless of the function that you led, kind of flat-footed in many ways, in many situations. And so I think by acknowledging what we don't know, you're just kind of going out on a limb with everybody and say, I want to lead you through this. I'm not quite sure how to lead you through it yet, but we'll go through it together. I don't think there's enough vulnerability out there. I think being more human at work and how you show up would make it more graceful. And I also think that you would, by nature of sharing your mistakes, guess what I got to learn today? Like shifting that mindset, that growth mindset, you will accelerate the growth of the company and your team, right? By creating this, false facade of perfection. You're right, I got all the answers, or I know how I want this thing to look or be. I think you slow everyone's roll down. I mean, Steve, how often, like, if you believed I already had the formula, then you would scurry around, try to read my brain, get the formula down. It'd slow you down and make you anxious. That's not healthy for creativity, for problem solving, for the culture. And so, gosh, Trish, I hope more leaders are becoming more real with who they are and their learnings.
I think that, at the beginning, Steve was kind of mentioning like there are all these other topics, right, that we could be talking about that are just so on the forefront. But what intrigues me about just everything we're going to cover now is that that's really, to me, kind of that underpinning that goes with all of those topics, right? So when you're talking about both, acquiring talent and finding them and retaining them and developing them and all the things, right? To me, I think it comes back to, do you trust your leaders? Is there trust in the organization? And if not, that's when people leave. So I'd love to maybe, could you kick it off maybe and really just talk a little bit about how can leaders build trust in the organization and with your teams? And what are just some of those critical pieces you see as somebody who's been a leader for quite a long time?
I think there's a bunch of different perspectives or avenues in which to build trust. One is to be vulnerable first, right? Trust is not, you got to trust me and then I'll be vulnerable. I actually think you have to be vulnerable first to build the trust. You got to walk the talk. I think you also have to be really clear about who you are, and I had to learn that the hard way. I was a kludgy first-time manager, but I think it's important that my team understands I'm an introvert. So don't read my signals the wrong way. Or I get anxious about my children or my daughter, or, this is happening in my life. I don't have to disclose everything, but I have to give you enough to know that I'm crispy today or I'm sad today. And so it's not you, it's me. And give me grace to go through a bad day and we'll be great tomorrow. I think that builds trust. Because then you get to be crispy and be sad, right? You get to have a bad moment, and the team gets to rally around you. Because I know over decades of experience that when you do this, you get more helping hands around you than not. I've never, ever been left alone when I've been that vulnerable. I've had more help and more care when I've shared a little bit more. When I get a little, like, I guess I have to tell you, like, this is what's going on, and I'm uncomfortable. I don't have an answer, and I'm scared, or I'm sad. And all of a sudden, people come and hold me virtually. Like, it's just like a great moment for me. And I think that's one way. I think another way as a leader is, gosh darn it, walk your talk. And when you're not walking your talk and someone raises the mirror up and says, you're not, you espouse this, but you did this, acknowledge it, own it, be accountable, and adjust. You have a higher bar. Let's face it, as leaders, it's a privilege. So you have a higher bar. You got to walk your talk. And if you're not, you will not be trusted. Whether they tell you or not, you will not be trusted. The other thing is, how well do you communicate? And I'm not saying be an eloquent speaker. What I'm saying is communication. Do you listen? Do you echo back for understanding? Do you share feedback constructively with care, not to overwhelm, not to make someone nervous? All those things add into that pie, that stew of trust. That's what I'm saying. It's like a lot of things that come together for trust, but I think it starts with vulnerability.
Pat, thank you for sharing that. I was thinking as you were talking about this idea of like to be vulnerable. I think you maybe I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. You have to feel that it's a safe environment where you could be vulnerable in, right? And we've done a lot of shows over the last few years on accessibility and access to opportunity. And I think about in the context of we've learned, I've learned so much, but I've learned one of the things we've learned is about folks who need accommodations in the workplace often don't ask for them, right? Because they're worried. They're a little bit afraid of being seen as less than or not quite up to the job, or this is just going to give this employer an excuse to manage me out of the whatever, right? As the case may be. And so that's one example only. That's certainly not the only one, but I'd love for you to maybe talk a little bit about your experience with that culture or the environment that's safe enough that people, especially newer people, maybe even coming into the organization, can feel comfortable to be vulnerable.
That's a tough one. You're right. So people that are, neurodiverse, people that you can't even see their hidden differences, they will really try to hide them, like 90% of them, because they don't want to be judged, perceived weak, ruin a chance, an opportunity. And people with disabilities that are seen are significantly underemployed or unemployed, right? So that's I think you're picking on a great example. So I am neurodiverse. I'm dyslexic. I hid it for probably the first 15 years. Even my family told me to hide it because if I wanted to do this work and if I wanted to do compensation, like my dyslexia is like a stutter. So when I get anxious, I transpose letters and numbers. So like I've actually messed up my CEO's bonus one time. The first time I ever came a CHRO, I messed up his bonus on his. On a PowerPoint because I was so nervous, I transposed it, reduced it by only $50,000, y'all.
Oh, no big deal.
No big deal. And it was the CFO go, Waters, is there a reason why you changed Tom's bonus? And I'm like, uh-oh. And normally what I would do is less pretty, copy my Excel spreadsheet that I knew was protected and audited and put it in a deck, right? I would care less about being pretty. Because I was new and wanted to impress people, and I didn't feel so safe, and I was still trying to figure out my way, I retyped everything and tried to make it look nice with the font and this and that, and I messed up, right? And so in front of the board, I had to disclose I am dyslexic, and I must have got nervous and transposed. But my first answer really was I didn't think Tom performed so well last year, so I changed his
Just cut it.
bonus. Yeah, and then I was a little more honest. But I think, and then I even told Chris Todd, my CEO at UKG, that I was dyslexic. And to his credit, gosh, I so admire him. He called me up, before I even started. He goes, "Is there any accommodation? Like, how can I help you with the dyslexia? Like, is there anything I'm supposed to do?" I love the question. I'm like, actually, no. So when I misspell, don't think I don't know how to spell. It's just when it transposes my head sometimes when I'm nervous, it gets worse, and I'll be slower in my mouth to audit myself. Because I'm conscious of what I'm doing. And I think I know that if you slow your roll as a leader, as an organization, and you normalize everyone's uniqueness, these things can come to the surface and we can adapt. Think about situational leadership that was designed to accommodate different styles. Why can't we just accommodate different ways of working and thinking and operating to get to the same output? And so I have been very verbal with my differences, my daughter's differences, to let people know it's so, I like the difference. I think it's my superpower now. Like I am so thrilled that my brain is a little different because I am more creative and more compassionate and higher empathy because of it. I think that stood me well for my gig, right? I think people that learn how to be great and pursue their purpose through challenges are just grittier, resilient. So, psychological safety is what you're getting at. It's important, Steve. Not everyone has it, and I feel bad for it. And I think it's up to the leadership to model it.
I think that's such a great point, Pat. And I think that that's something if you are maybe interviewing with a company and assessing, or even maybe looking at where you are, right? If you're not feeling that sense of safety, I mean, that's something that's really important. And it's probably nothing that we've been taught to ask during an interview, right? So when you're talking to the various team members, I mean, maybe asking them if they have an example of when was the time that you might not have felt as safe about performance or something at work, or even something at home and sharing it at work, or do you feel like you can share that? You know, I think your example is such a good one because I'm sitting there nodding and I'm thinking, like, when to hear that Chris Todd asked you what he could do to make it more comfortable for you. Steve, I know you'll agree with this. We've done so many shows on how making any accommodation for any sort of, whether it's a physical, mental, perceived, not perceived, right, hidden, different ability, it actually benefits everyone.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's not
Oh.
just, oh, treat you special because you
No.
might, you know, switch some numbers around. Having that extra moment to take a pause and having your CEO be open to that and want that, right? That helps every single team member to think, you know what? It's okay if I take an extra minute and check my work or whatever, right?
The analogy I used a couple years back, I was working at ServiceNow and I was talking about this, and I'm like, look, being different makes us all stronger, makes us smarter. And if you think about ADA and accommodations in the ramp, you know, when that became a law for access, you know, businesses grumbled. They're like, oh, it's expensive, it's this, that, and the other thing. What they did not anticipate was the parents with the stroller with the baby, the biker that takes his bike or her bike up into the ramp, the person that just got their knee replaced, needing to like shuffle up to the door and do it with safety. They opened up the aperture to so much care and access beyond what they thought was the targeted audience that they just grew stronger. And that I can spout example after example to your point, Trish.
I think also your example is a good one of it's not expensive. Not every accommodation. In fact, in all my years in HR, it was very rare that we had an expensive monetary accommodation. I mean, just having your boss ask you, "What do you need?" And you were like, "I think I'm good, but I'll let you know if something comes up," right? So it's often not a monetary thing. It's letting someone just in on, hey, I might need that little bit of extra time. Or sometimes I get flustered. Don't worry if I do. It's not, you know,
Yeah, it's
because
me.
then
Yeah, I'll figure it out.
it normalizes it, you know. I once had a CHRO of mine when I was at BJC Healthcare, and he was so wise, very much like you in terms of these experiences, right? And he was talking about if you have, say, a leader who comes in and cusses for the first 5 minutes every day. And if no one says anything to that person, it becomes like, well, that's just him or her, right? Like that's just what they do. And like it doesn't like negatively impact every single person if that's just, well, they've got to come in and like do that thing. Not that that's a right thing to do, but in other words, like whatever your thing is, if you think it's so bizarre or just not going to be understood, it's probably not the case. I actually wrote down where you said, "It's not you, it's me." And that goes for any relationship, right? We are all solely focused on ourselves, really. It really is about it's us. It's not you, it is me, right? So we don't remember that though sometimes when we're thinking about how others perceive us. So what do you think? I mean, we've talked about trust, but what or are there things more specifically, that if you feel like you're a leader in a company where you don't have that level of psychological safety, are there some tips of like what could that leader maybe start doing to encourage that type of a shift in their, or is that possible? Is it possible to introduce that into an organization that's established?
Yes, absolutely. Every time you hire a new leader, they're going to have to establish psychological safety. Every time I ramp up, I'm this odd thing, a threatening thing. You will see engagement fear, like someone new. So I'm going to go through this uncertainty trough. And then after some pattern recognition, maybe I come out to certainty and I feel okay. I can navigate Pat. I kind of know what she's all about. And the purpose and the goal for the leader is to make that trough shallow and shorter in duration, right? Be aware that you create this anxiety moment for everybody, and that is so normal. And so what you do to create safety is like, look, I'm going to ramp up, I'm going to learn, I'm going to make mistakes, I'm going to make assumptions that are wrong. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to be wrong. Your job is to politely nudge me and tell me when I'm wrong. So here's how I like my feedback. I don't like it in a big group and I'm really screwing up. I like you to teams me really quick, go waters, like step that back and or raise your hand. So let me add a finer point to what Pat's saying and course correct me in the moment if it's going to have an undue impact on the org. But here's how I like to have feedback. Here's how I want to be corrected. And if I'm doing something right, can you please tell me so I keep doing that thing? Because I am trying to be my best self. So I want both the positive and the constructive along the way so I can course correct. Then I turn around and go, how do you like to get feedback, Trish? And what's your goal? Like, do you want to be a CHRO? Do you want to be a head basket weaver? Do you want to be a pottery maker, Steve? So my feedback will be on point. I won't give Steve basket weaving tips because he wants to be a pottery guy. So I'm gonna make sure I am indexing on my team. And then I give them permission to give me feedback throughout the way, and I definitely do it during the reviews, right? If I'm going through, I'm like, what could I have done to make you better at your craft, more confident? Am I showing care and appreciation? My black box is that I don't celebrate enough. I am like, I do the checklist. It's in my head. I'm an introvert, so I don't celebrate enough. I know I don't. I ask people to help me, but if I'm not appreciating you, please tell me, because what you do matters, and here's why it matters. And I take time to tell you exactly what you do and why I think you're so amazing. And they give me feedback. I just like you to not only me, but my team. Can you, like, we're kind of hidden over here. We do the dailies. You recognize all the big programs, but about me, like, it's like you never celebrate payroll. You just get your paycheck. Well, I think I should celebrate payroll more. So, what can I do? So I think every leader has an opportunity to build that safety.
Yeah, I think some of this definitely what needs to happen even throughout the organization too, right, Pat? Because I think lots, especially once the organization achieves any type of scale, right? And you're into hundreds of employees, thousands of employees, tens of thousands of employees, right? Whereas we know that so much of the environment and the culture is modeled and lived, right, by the senior leadership team and those folks who people are all watching. Most employees day to day, right, is with their frontline manager or first level manager, right? Or maybe or whoever that person may be. And there's certainly opportunities there, right, to help those people who have really, really tough jobs, I think, to also sort of help them and support them and give them the tools that they need to create the environment that we'd all like to be in as well. Pat, the last thing for me would be, are there any kinds of specific things you've either seen in your career or just you think about, hey, these are the kinds of tools we can equip those managers, right, to be more empathetic, to be a little bit more vulnerable themselves and encourage their folks as well.
Lots and lots. You're right. They're on the front line. And so they get someone in front of them they're modeling after. And some of those people that are they're following may not have all the right skills either. So you might be what I call chasing the wrong rabbit. I'm like, don't chase that behavior. That might be the wrong behavior. Let's like open up your opportunities and your skill set. And so what I've learned over time is to teach the frontline leader to call it what it is, like to break things down in very pragmatic terms, not fancy stuff. So your teams need to have career conversation. Every one of your direct reports, you need to know where their compass is. You need to understand their values and their motivators so you know if you're in conflict. So have an intentional meeting. So if you have one-on-ones, do you have one-on-ones? Yes. What's the purpose of those one-on-ones? Is it for you to do operational stuff or is it for you to take care of your employee? Let's make sure you're taking care of your employee. In that agenda, call it out. Say, this is a career conversation one-on-one. This is a check-in one-on-one, right? This is you giving me feedback, upward feedback one-on-one. Because if you don't, then the employee walks away confused. They may not know it was their career conversation because you just had this real nice conversation. How you doing? What are you learning? That's great. I think I'm having this impactful conversation. And you're walking away going, that was nice. And when you call it out, really specific. It changes the tone of the meeting. It's really amazing to watch these frontline managers go, I want that kind of a conversation. And then they lean up and they go, okay, to my boss, I want to have that conversation. I aspire to be this. I want to learn that. I crafted a spreadsheet, a while back in my career. I called it Goldilocks spreadsheet because I needed a tool, the way my brain works, to allow me to have these conversations with my boss and my team. And it was like a simple spreadsheet. It's my values, my motivators, and your values sharpen as we age. Like, when you're going to walk away from a relationship if this value is broken, right? And the motivators can change on a dime. So if your health's at risk, your family's at risk, you're going to pivot. And then you have your superpowers that you're drawn on to use over and over again, people rely on you for, and things you want to learn and experience. And I use that as a tool, as a framework for me to talk up and out and down. And I want to teach people how to have these conversations in a very normal way.
That's
I love
awesome.
that example as a tool. One of the things, Pat, I know we didn't plan on making this like a tech show specifically, but obviously you work at UKG. Can you maybe just spend a minute or two and touch on sort of whet the appetite, if you will, of the listeners? What are some of the ways that the software can actually support some of these activities that we're talking about, right? Having the check-ins, having meaningful, impactful check-ins. And I love the idea of like really calling out specifically what you're there to talk about. But how can software help you if you're not using it that way or if you're not thinking of it that way?
Oh my gosh, that's the so right now. So now you got me excited. So right now, and I was excited before, there is technology out there that allows you to navigate these conversations. Here's your quarterly check-in, and here's your template on how to have a conversation. And so you can write your notes and get feedback and all that. I mean, you can put that part of your employee experience journey. But what if we unlocked AI and machine learning just another level up, right? What if it recognized that you and I, Trish, haven't had our one-on-ones consistently, and it nudged me as your manager? Because what I've been doing is canceling our one-on-ones because I so depend on you. You know your craft, but I've been spending more time with Steve because I think he needs me more. And you're interpreting that as not caring, not respecting you. And so the AI bot can go, hey, Waters, looking at my calendar and looking at our email, our network connection with Trish is weakening. You're spending X amount of time with Steve, but Trish has XYZ, goals in front of her. You could pull my goal sheet for you, and it can give me a template that says, hey, Trish, I realize we haven't had a one-on-one. We're due. Let's schedule one. I'm excited to learn about what you're doing on X, Y, and Z. And if you want more frequent time with me, please ask. So it prompts me to ask you, are you getting enough of Pat? Are you getting enough guidance from me? And it'll tell me where I'm starting to lose traction. It could help me in recruiting. Gosh, can you imagine if it made me more human just to check in on the process? Like if you were in university and I made you an offer, but I won't see you for 6 months. It tells me you're taking your finals. Here's tips on how to study, and here's your coupon to Domino's Pizza. Like that would be really cool. You're like, Pat, remember this? She knows
Can
my
we just pause on that That would
one
be
for a
pretty
second,
cool.
Pat? Because I have twins that are in college. Steve has a college student. I mean, I think that is something as a leader, and you're just in your day-to-day, you are not thinking about necessarily what those college kids are going through. And to them, that future job with you is everything. They're hyper fixating on it often, right? So God, what a good suggestion, honestly.
Yeah, because then all of a sudden I get healthy tips. You know me, you remember me, you care about me. Gosh, I will not talk to any other company because you got me. You
That's
care.
right. And the one thing I would say too, and we can sort of think about some of this, is it's the importance of the folks who are building these tools, right? Many of whom we know, Trish, and many work at UKG, definitely need to be having these kinds of conversations with people leaders and leaders, right, as they build and inform those decisions around development, right? Because it's important to make sure, much like we're talking about vulnerability, a little bit about empathy. It's certainly important that the tools that we use, right, to help us are also have that built into their design, to their ethos. It's not even something maybe you can see, but it's something it's there. And people who are building the tools are thinking about them, particularly around these important things around coaching and developing and expressing care and concern and checking in on people meaningfully, right? It's very important to design for these things in mind too.
And there's nothing holding us back. Trish, think about your anniversary. You have a work anniversary. You've been with me for 3 years. If I may not pay attention. Again, my checklist might be on other things.
That's
And then
right.
I have an AI buddy that tells me it's Trish's anniversary. It'd be great to, one, celebrate with the team, but two, check in, like, is this meeting your goals? Right? Like, how are you developing the last 3? Let's reflect back on your journey the last 3 years, and where do you want the next 3 years to look like? Wow, if someone did that with me, I'd be floored.
Yeah, because I think we didn't grow up in our careers with that, right? You just said something about an anniversary. I remember taking my job at St. Louis Children's Hospital where they, in orientation, they handed out an index card and you wrote down like what your favorite things are, like favorite candy, your favorite music, your favorite. And then if they remembered an anniversary, you might get that thing, right? Maybe. But it was on an index card somewhere, right? So again, I think we've always had these desires to have that connection. And we probably need a whole separate show with you, Pat, honestly, to go through more of the tech side of it, because I do think that's the other side of the story, right? Is how it enables all these things. But Steve, you and I have these conversations all the time with people where they're so afraid about artificial intelligence or generative AI more specifically, and how that's gonna, now we're back to, the robots are taking our jobs again. That conversation's reared its head. But the truth is, what you described even briefly is the way that having those nudges through the technology actually empowers you to be more human with your team. Yeah, so
I'd agree.
yeah, I just feel like I would love for us to continue this conversation and really dig in and maybe some specific examples of how technology can actually move the needle when it comes to that, both getting people in the door and making them feel special and then continuing that conversation. I love this. I could talk to you
Great
all day,
stuff.
honestly.
Pat, this has been fantastic stuff. Here's a couple of things I want to say, and we'll let you go. Of course, we appreciate you taking the time to spend with us today. We'll make sure folks know how to find you, and also we'll link out to the video of the Today Show interview that sort of sparked this entire conversation. We'll put that in the show notes as well. It's really worth a watch. Pat Waters, UKG, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us. As Trish said, let's hope to get you back on the show in the near future, and we'll talk some more about this stuff. But thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you. This was fun. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Great stuff. So Trish, great stuff. Thank you for leading the charge to get this show set up. I appreciate that.
Just
Fantastic.
me having some coffee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mind of my own business.
Let's remind everybody, catch all the show archives at hrhappyhour.net. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks so much for listening. For our guest, Pat Waters, for Trish Steed, my name is Steve Bose. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time, and bye for now.